Hello and welcome back to Commodity Conversations by the team at Mercado, the podcast where we keep you up to date with the latest trends, drivers and moves in livestock, grain and oilseed and fibre markets. My name's Olivia Agar. Thanks for listening to episode 270. The Australian Wool Production Forecasting Committee have recently released updates to their projections. So today we're joined by Stephen Hill, Chair of the Committee, to hear about what they're expecting from the season ahead and how conditions and sentiment in each state is driving the projected changes. Before we get into the episode, a few key bits of news from the markets, and it really is the weather that's been the drive of chatter both here and overseas this week. The BOM's latest climate drivers update reports that the El Nino is officially over, with Enzo moving into a neutral phase. A low pressure trough is also bringing a good chance of rainfall through New South Wales, with up to 50 mil in parts this week and small totals in southern WA as well, which will be very welcomed if it comes. And overseas, the forecast had tipped some welcome rain across the southern winter wheat region in Russia. But as we know, forecasts have a nasty habit of changing and the rain didn't deliver as expected. So production prospects are still concerning for Russia at this stage, which is a supportive factor for the grain market. Another bit of weather news overseas, and this time for canola. Very wet conditions in Brazil's key soybean growing region during harvest is putting some of the crop at risk. So this bullish news for soybeans has flowed through to canola, with solid gains in both Canadian and European futures markets. That's it from me. I'll leave you with Stephen Hill and Robert Herman. Enjoy the episode.
G'day, Stephen, and welcome back to Commodity Conversations.
Yeah, hi, Rob. Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we're both on the Australian Wool Production Forecasting Committee, and you're the chairman of it, but we've just seen that the Wool Production Forecasting Committee have released their latest outlook, I suppose. But before we get to that, just as a bit of a refresher, Steve, how does the tell us a little bit about the Wool Production Forecasting Committee. How does it collect data? What does it collect? And how and who uses these forecasts?
Yeah, sure. I've been the chair for 2 years after being in the industry for well over 30 years. And I was quite impressed at the robustness of the process. And what it is, it has six state committee meetings or committees that feed into one national committee for a sign-off. On those committees is a very wide range of people, producers, brokers, consultants, exporters, and all the, of course, the industry bodies like AWTA, AWI, and including also some government departments, ABARES and DAF, etc.
So it's a, you're right, it is pretty impressive the way the structure that's in place, and it gives you a lot of confidence. But what we're focusing on, I suppose, is the current season we're in. In December, the committee came out with a forecast. What were the changes in this current forecast on that previous forecast that came out in relation to this year's wool production?
This was the April meeting. The committee meets four times a year, but it does three times a year, sorry, but it does six forecasts. This was the fourth forecast for the 23-24 season. And that came in slightly lower, from 328 to 324 million kilos since the December meeting. And in actual fact, that's the same difference from the previous season, 22-23. So it's not a very significant change. But the other job for this meeting in the April is to give the first forecast for the next season, 24-25. And that's showing a little bit more negative outlook, reducing the number to 306 million kilos.
Yes, now that's a reflection of the situation we're seeing at the moment. But you mentioned that each state contributes, Stephen. So there were differences in between the states with the change from the current clip producing to next year's. Yep. Could you just take us through some of those changes that you saw?
Right. Well, year on year, we've got New South Wales and South Australia. They're actually showing increases around the 3% each, while every other state is showing a reduction, especially in the ones that are probably got the worst seasonal conditions, being Western Australia and Tasmania.
Yes, well, of course, Western Australia is a pretty significant producer of wool. Tasmania, while they're very important to us, Stephen, they're not the big producer and not as big as they used to be. But I imagine that the WA impact is something that the committee looks at very seriously.
Yeah, it is. They've been trending lower for quite a while, coupled with their poor season, compared to the rest of Australia. They've got some policy issues over there, and definitely sentiment in general for wool production is quite negative. So it would seem that some producers there have made the decisions to destock quite significantly.
Yeah, so that's right. Well, I'm actually sitting in on this recording from the West at the moment, and one of the things you're picking up over here is that the attitude towards sheep is not great. You know, it's a combination of perhaps, weaker commodity prices in terms of wool and sheep meat, also the live export. But we've also got the season here, Steve. So yeah. How has the cut per head forecast changed, if at all, for next year?
It's not significant, actually, just a small decrease. The major change is actually in sheep numbers. Sheep numbers for the 24-25 season, and I'll just qualify the first forecast from April looking to next year, it is a little bit crystal ball stuff, but the largest move is not in fleece weights, it's in sheep numbers of about 4 or 5 million kilos, from 71.6 million to 67.3 nationally. And as you point out, the largest contributor to that move will be ex-Western Australia.
New South Wales, though, which has got the biggest flock, it's forecast to produce a bit more wool. Is that right?
Yeah, no, exactly. The same as South Australia. Their seasons have been quite good. And they're showing, as I said earlier, the sort of a 3% increase. So they're, and New South Wales being the largest wool producing state in Australia, they're doing, their best effort to offset any other issues around the country. So that's, still quite positive.
So you're right. New South Wales is doing the heavy hitting at the moment. I noticed that in Victoria, there's a little bit of concern again for the continual, switch to cropping and I guess also to, run less sheep. How are you seeing that, Steve?
I think if we look back a little bit, probably towards December, there was a forecast for environmental conditions of El Nino, and people made some decisions then on the basis that they wouldn't have the feed. That forecast hasn't been as aggressive as first thought, which is good in hindsight. And some of those areas probably destocked when they may regret it in hindsight, but that's actually been offset as well by the lowish sheep meat and wool prices that some people have had to keep stock, keep stock running. So that's why the numbers of sheepshorn numbers year on year haven't changed this year, but next year, it looks like the impact will flow through. Victoria itself, it does have potentially more options for the mixed farming, and they can look at other opportunities in farm outputs. And I think, some have made those decisions, and it is a bit touch and go. Obviously, the price of wool at the moment is a significant factor in making those decisions. We probably really haven't recovered post-COVID dip in wool prices. We've still got pressures with wool textiles being a discretionary spend. And you see it in the news all the time, as far as cost of living, interest rates, and in general subdued consumer mood. They probably don't see the outlook or the recovery too close in. So that's they're basing their decisions on that. And if they see other markets, particularly grains and cropping, that are doing a little bit better, and they've got available land that can support those other enterprises, some that are able have done the switch.
So, Steve, you and I were both in Adelaide, seems like a while ago now. I think it was only a couple of weeks where we were at the IWTA conference. And it was terrific to get to be able to interact with people from right across the wool industry, whether in the producer right up to the retail, and whether in the Northern Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere, and across all the countries being represented, all the wool producing countries, and of course, a big representation from China and Europe. What would you say was the feeling that you come away with from that conference?
Well, in actual fact, I was quite energized after the conference. It was very, very well received. I think there was definitely some topical things that we discussed over the days. But in general, the things that I didn't realize was there's still a heap of investment going along in the wool pipeline. And from Australia outwards, some of the larger, let's call them larger family or corporate farmers, are investing heavily still. We've got first stage processes. I saw a video of one of the largest mills in China that had just gone completely robotic. And there's investments as well in spinning and weaving. So I was actually encouraged that, that there's still people that see a very positive future in wool. And, you know, putting their money where their mouth is.
I think that's a really good point, Stephen. And it always makes you feel good. We know from an Australian perspective that we've got a lot of wool producers and industry players here, whether they be brokers or buyers or testing houses, that are passionate about wool. But, gee, it's great to go to a conference and have people on the other side of the world who seem to have an equal amount of passion.
No, absolutely. And being the local conference for IWTO, you know, they have it each year in quite exotic locations, actually. And this year it was Adelaide, but I think it was one of the best conferences I've ever been to. And yeah, the commitment and the investment, as I mentioned, and the passion for the fibre, and you know, it just shows that there is a very positive future. If it is a little bit, let's call it depressed at the moment, and farmers are feeling it more than most, we've been here before, and I imagine it won't last. In the opposite argument to wool and textiles that are discretionary spend, they also bounce out of it first as well. When consumers decide that they're they don't want to save anymore and the outlook's a bit better, the first thing they do is go out and buy clothes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that the wool industry, if you, whatever part of the industry you're in, you need to take long-term decisions to be prepared for those good times. But it also means that without talking it down, we are in times when it's a little bit tough and people do need, you know, that outlook going forward that gives them the confidence. Just to finish off, Steve, just to go back to the next year's forecast, the 2024-25 season forecast, and you made the point that it is a crystal ball gazing right now, but just explain what happens now. So this is the first forecast for that year. That forecast will be updated progressively, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely. The next meeting of the committees is in August. At that meeting, we obviously review the current season and the second forecast for next season. At that point, we will obviously have more data and we can get more accurate figures. And we do release at that point individual state breakups. And at this stage, you know, that's what we're looking at. If I was going to comment further, I would say that the 306 is potentially a conservative number, which we like to do at this first forecast, and get more accurate as we go with the additional data and information that we have to add to our decisions.
Yes, well, I go back to your original point about your comment on how impressed you were when you first joined the committee about the robustness of it. Part of that is that not only do we get, I think, pretty accurate wool forecasts, but it gives us a handle on what's happening in the Australian sheep industry. So, Stephen Hill, thank you very much for coming on to Commodity Conversations again. If we can book you in for the next forecast and have you come back and give us an update, I think this is not only important for the wool industry, I think it's important for the sheep industry as well. So thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks, Rob.